You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hello, hello, hello. Greetings, friends. Greetings, patriots. My name's Carl Frisch, and I'm filling in for Tom Hartman today. We've got a great show for you. Today we're going to be talking about that Republican debate in New Hampshire last night where they discussed the economy without talking about jobs. We're going to talk about Occupy Wall Street and what's happening there. We'll be talking about Newt Gingrich's plan for the judiciary and a lot more. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. I don't know if you watched the Republican debate last night, but it was vintage Republican field. I mean, the only thing that I didn't quite see happen, the only shining moment was that I didn't hear anybody in the audience boo the dead, people that are killed on death row, jobs. I didn't hear anybody boo. It might have been a Republican debate first, and I have to tell you, I was expecting it to happen. At the very least, I would have expected that when they said they were in New Hampshire and maybe they said the state motto, the Republican audience would have cheered the or die portion of the Granite State's motto, live free or die. But they didn't. Instead, they were treated to a host of candidates, the likely suspects, Rick Perry, Mitt Romney, Herman Cain, or Herb Cain, as Sarah Palin likes to call him, Michelle Bachmann, Rick Santorum, Newt Gingrich, etc., all the also-rans. Not a lot was different. Not a lot of new territory was covered. One thing that's clear is that, you know, we've got two-thirds of Americans that support raising taxes on the wealthy, making them pay their fair share, and Republicans just won't go there, even though 53% to 56% of their own party support such measures. I couldn't think of anybody better to discuss the Republican debate with than my good friend, host of the nationally syndicated Bill Press show, Bill Press. Good morning. Good afternoon, Bill.
Hey, Carl, you and I usually see each other in the morning. Good afternoon. Hi, how you doing?
I'm well. Usually we see each other before most people are awake, so.
I know. Don't remind me.
So what did you make of the debate last night?
You know, I have to tell you, I thought it was the most boring debate on the most amateurish debate I have ever seen. I'm not kidding. I think Bloomberg should lose its TV license. I mean, that was, it was so bad, and I think that Charlie Rose should pass legislation in Congress, you know, prohibiting him from ever moderating another debate.
Well,
he's a great interviewer, but boy, he was just so bad, so sloppy. The questions were bad, and they said we're going to have 2 hours on the economy, which says bring your talking points, anti-Obama talking points on the economy. That's all you have to do.
Right? They basically turned into robots, incapable of discussing job creation.
Right, right. And then the centerpiece is 999. You know, most people didn't realize that Herman Cain was actually speaking German. You know, 999. He's the party of nine.
Yeah, well, I think with Herb, I only call him Herb Cain, by the way, now.
Oh.
Herb Cain, as Sarah Palin calls him. You know, he's an interesting mix of pizza toppings, but he's not much of a presidential candidate.
I think he's a clown, actually. And 999, Rick Santorum, I have to tell you, is the only one who had the guts to take it on and say, come on, Americans are not going to support a new 9% sales tax on everything you buy, right? On top of the local tax and the state tax that you already pay, we'd be paying like 20% tax at Walmart, right? And who's that going to impact? It's not going to impact the people that shop on Madison Avenue.
Meanwhile, right? The people who own Walmart will see their taxes go down, you know, 20-30%.
Exactly.
This is the Bush tax cuts on steroids. You're raising the taxes on the poor to pay for huge windfall tax deductions on the wealthy.
Yeah, here's what I think we have to keep in mind is what we saw last night. Remember, this is the best the Republican Party has to offer. Right. Now, by their own winnowing process. Carl, that's pathetic.
Oh, it's worse than pathetic because if you think about the people who decided not to run, it's as if they were saying, you know what, I'm too good for this field.
right.
And really, the cast of characters who decided not to run are just as ridiculous. Sarah Palin, Chris Christie. I mean, it's right out of central casting for some, David Lynch movie.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, two things that surprised me. One, ahead of time, the expectations were really high for this. And I must admit, I watched it because I thought there might be fireworks. But Herman Cain said, I'm going to go after Mitt Romney, right? So what did he do? He asked him a stupid question like, why can't you summarize your whole economic proposal in three words, like I did? You know, right. That's the new standard. And then Rick Perry, they've been letting him take a good nap every day. We know they've had a coach. He's been training, sparring with a make-believe Mitt Romney, and he was like asleep at the switch. He might as well not have been there last night.
Well, he was like the Josh Brolin character of W, but at the beginning of the movie, not completely with it, if you get my drift. But, you know, Herman Cain, I'm surprised that nobody pointed out that Herb Cain, again, I want to call him Herb Cain, like Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that nobody pointed out that if you turn Herb Cain upside down, his plan becomes 666, the mark of the devil. And if they thought Obama was the Antichrist, they might want to look inside their own ranks.
Well, actually, I don't remember. Michelle Bachmann made that point. And most people in the audience, by the way, I heard you mention about the audience ahead of time. I think they had lectured the audience not to show your ignorance like they had done, or your ugliness like they did in Orlando and at the Reagan Library, because they were inordinately silent last night. So I think they'd been admonished. But Michelle Bachmann did say, you know, if you turn it upside down, the devil is in the details.
Let's hit that clip, Jacob.
I don't think most people got the reference, to tell the truth.
Well, I want to hear that. So, Jacob, why don't we play that clip?
And one thing I would say is when you take the 999 plan and you turn it upside down, I think the devil's in the details.
Bachmann, I have to tell you, nobody has gone out with a whimper worse than Michelle Bachmann. I mean, everybody's focused on Perry doing so poorly. But Bachmann, I mean, I just saw a poll for the Iowa caucuses that has Michelle Bachmann in like fifth or sixth place.
Yes, yes, yeah. It's all over for Michelle Bachmann, and it has been for a while.
But, Bill, she won the straw poll.
I know. That lasted. She didn't even get – poor girl. She didn't even get 15 minutes. You know what I mean?
Well, you know – I think
3.5 minutes.
I think she's run into a kind of a blockade because, you know, she doesn't have a lot of government experience. All of her experience is in the private sector. If we could hit clip three. Here we go.
My husband and I started our own successful business. I'm 55. I spent my whole life in the private sector. I get job creation, too. I'm a federal tax lawyer. That's what I do for a living. And my background is in economics.
Mm-hmm.
So, she spent her entire life in the private sector. You know, the only portion of her life that she spent in the private sector is that reparative therapy clinic that she and her husband run to pray the gay away.
I was going to say, I wouldn't brag too much about the business that she and her husband started, which is so disreputable, pray the gay away. And, you know, how much time did she actually spend as a tax attorney? And I think being a tax collector for the IRS is not necessarily the best credential.
It's certainly a winning.
Either.
It's certainly a winning resume bullet in a Republican primary.
Have you noticed, though, Carl? Have you noticed that today?
Hey, Bill. We're gonna hit a break, but I'd love to come back and chat a little bit more about this with you.
Okay,
we're talking to
right,
Bill
good.
Press. Give us a call, toll free 866-987 Tom. That's 866-987-8466. We'll continue talking about the Republican debate last night.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Coming up, we're going to be continuing the discussion with Bill Press about last night's Republican debate. Republican crazy train pulled into New Hampshire last night. Joining me to talk about the Republican debate that was sponsored by Bloomberg News is Bill Press, host of the nationally syndicated Bill Press Show, author of one of my favorite books, Toxic Talk, and you've got a new book coming out soon, don't you, Bill?
Indeed, called The Obama Hate Machine. Hey, Carl, I have to give you a quick little vignette, okay?
Yes.
Because I want you and your listeners to know how we're connecting. I am actually at the White House. I am in front of the briefing room of the White House, just up from the White House kitchen, walking outside with my cell phone in the rain under an umbrella. So,
you know, Bill, you should really try a little bit harder for me.
All right, I'll put the umbrella away.
So the crazy was on display at this debate last night. One candidate, Rick Don't Google Me Santorum, actually advocated war with China, if we can hit that clip.
Pennsylvania, a competitive agenda of yours would be what?
Well, I already put forward a plan. You know, Mitt, I don't want to go to a trade war. I want to beat China. I want to go to war with China and
there you go. How about a president saying he wants to go to war with China, Bill?
Well, I think he probably also wants to go to war with Iran today, right?
So right.
There are not enough wars for Rick Santorum. And then, how about Newt Gingrich? Maybe you've got this clip saying he would. I'm anticipating, right? He wouldn't put Ben Bernanke in jail. He would put Barney Frank and Chris Dodd in jail.
Right. If we can hit clip two, this you got to hear.
The fact is, in both the Bush and the Obama administrations, the fix has been in. And I think it's perfectly reasonable for people to be angry, but let's be clear who put the fix in. The fix was put in by the federal government. And if you want to put people in jail, I want to second what Michelle said. You ought to start with Barney Frank and Chris Dodd, and let's look at the politicians who created the environment, the politicians who profited from the environment, and the politicians who put this country in trouble.
Ladies and gentlemen, Newt Gingrich's spiraling irrelevancy.
Total.
Bill.
You know what got me also again? The three moderators, nobody jumped on that and said, Wait a minute, right? You, a former speaker, right, who was disgraced out of the speakership because of his screwing around with his, you know, his mistress while he was going after Bill Clinton. Now he wants to. Like,
Bill, to be clear, it was his second mistress.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Third wife, second mistress.
Newt's only hope is to say something outrageous in every debate so he gets a clip on the news the next day.
Right. I mean, this is now about book sales for him. This has nothing to do with being president of the United States. He's going to pay off that campaign debt so that he can get to paying off that Tiffany's debt.
And by the way, it's a book tour, you know, for Herb.
Herb.
As we call it. For Herb Cain, too, right? He's not even campaigning. He's got took 30 days out now to pump his new book. So,
right, and he actually told a reporter that his book tour and campaign were playing off nicely against each other, which, as far as I'm concerned, the Federal Elections Commission should be investigating that.
Yeah. Well, you know, you buy a book, you get a free pizza, so it's not a bad deal.
I'd rather eat the book, honestly. I don't know if you've ever had Godfather's Pizza, but the only reason you would possibly want to consume such garbage is if a literal godfather was holding a gun to your head.
Well, I have never consumed it, and I have no desire to. But, you know, Carl, also last night I think was pretty clear. You know, we know who the nominee of this party is going to be. You know, they didn't lay a glove on Mitt Romney. In fact, it looked like they were afraid.
I thought you were going to say Jesus. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, yeah. Right. I mean, he dominated the night. They kept asking him questions, let him talk as long as he wanted. And when they had a chance to question him, they were pussycats.
Well, yeah, they didn't lay a glove on him, or a mitten, if you will. And I think that just cements the inevitability factor here, which has been his entire campaign strategy from the beginning. That's really what Republican nominees end up achieving. I mean, if you go back the last 30 years, only one Republican candidate for president has not run at least once before and gotten the nomination, George W. Bush.
Right.
And only one candidate in the last 30 years has not been a Bush or a Dole and made it onto the ticket, and that was John McCain. They love to pick people that they've been around for a while.
No, exactly. And the other thing is a lot of people are making, but Romney, Cain is getting really close to Romney in Iowa. You know, Iowa doesn't really count. Iowa has been taken over the caucuses by the crazy evangelicals. And I remind you, remember 4 years ago, President Mike Huckabee, right?
Or 25 years ago, President Reverend Pat Robertson?
Oh, that's right.
I mean, yeah. Come on. I mean, well, he does have a full-time career now blaming gays and lesbians for whatever natural disaster happens to occur. So I guess he's that going for him.
And also for telling us that the earthquake was God sending us a message when the crack in the Washington Monument.
It's remarkable. Bill, what do you expect to happen next? I mean, you've got this cavalcade of Republican candidates endorsing Romney now, Chris Christie, et cetera. What do you think happens next?
Well, first of all,
I've got about 30 seconds.
Okay. Dennis Hastert endorsed Mitt Romney today. I think that's what you're going to see. You're going to see the establishment Republicans lining up behind Mitt Romney. He's going to be the nominee. And, Carl, if I had to guess today, I think he'll pick Chris Christie as his running mate. And
well, I don't think you would want to use the word running mate with Chris Christie, but
no. Okay.
I won't disagree with you. I think my money's on John Thune, since you don't hear about him, and he's Washington. So we'll see. Maybe we'll make a bet on the air one day.
You got it. Neither one can beat Barack Obama. That's a big thing.
That's what they say, if they don't beat themselves in the process. Bill Press, host of the nationally syndicated Bill Press Show. Thanks for joining me today, Bill.
Amen, brother.
Have a good one. This race is going to be something to watch. Keep in mind, anything could happen. The caucuses are just around the corner, coming up in just a few months. Anything could happen. What really needs to happen for a Republican to take on Romney is they have to take advantage of whatever happens in Iowa. So if they can do that, maybe they can shake this up. If not, it's Romney's to lose and Rick Perry's to sleep through. So this is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch. And we've got a lot more coming up.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Coming up, we'll be talking to Eric Beiler from Coffee Party USA about Occupy Wall Street and a special event happening in Washington October 29th. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I am Carl Frisch. Filling in today for Tom, who is en route to, he's in Denver. He's going to be doing an event tonight with David Sirota where he's going to be challenging a whole bunch of right-wing radio hosts in a forum that you won't want to miss. You can find details at tomhartman.com. And then Friday he's going to be on Bill Maher's program on HBO, so you want to check that out as well. You know, one thing that that occurs to me is that as we keep on hearing more and more about the growing movement, the Occupy movement, this really does come down to an issue of money. We have an economy that has shrunk for the middle class and those even less well off, and has only grown for the richest 1%, a handful of people, really. We've got to call George in Palmdale. George, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
George, Palmdale, that's like by my parents' place in Santa Clarita.
Yeah, right. I'm glad to talk to you. The reason I was calling is I get tired of this crap about this shared sacrifice. What are they talking about, the shared sacrifice? You know, everybody knows who ran up the debts.
Yes.
Who caused them, who ran them up, and who benefited from the debt.
Absolutely.
And so those are the people that should have to pay it back. Don't come to the middle class and the poor that didn't cause it to run it up and benefit from it.
But,
and,
George,
and say that, you know,
they pay no taxes, George.
You know, I don't hear anybody, even at your station, I want the people that were the responsible to have to pay back the deficit they caused.
Yeah.
Don't come to grandma,
George,
Social Security and Medicare, and say that we gotta pay our fair share and our shared sacrifice to bring down America's debt. The people that ran up America's debt should have to pay it down.
George,
people,
you are not alone. Upwards of 70% of the American people agree with you that it's time for them to pay their fair share. It's time for the wealthiest among us, the corporations, the super rich, those millionaires and billionaires, to pay
their
fair share. George,
that's
I want to thank you for joining me.
Yeah, and, let's forget about these cuts and abolish Social Security or cut Social Security or modify or reform. No, that's just fancy words.
No, it's a fancy word for transferring the money in Social Security to Wall Street. George, thanks for coming on with me today. Joining me now, somebody that I've worked very closely with over these last couple weeks, Eric Beiler is the co-founder of Coffee Party USA, which you can find online at coffeepartyusa.com. And more to the point, you can visit their new initiative at citizensintervention.com. That's citizensintervention.com. Eric Beiler, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Carl.
So, you know, a lot is happening out there as far as this Occupy Wall Street movement goes. It's moved far beyond Wall Street to Main Streets all over the country. You've been to many of these events. You've been up to New York. You've been here in Washington, D.C., checking things out. What is the takeaway that you've gotten from your experiences seeing this firsthand?
Well, I am a documentarian, and I have spent a lot of time interviewing people who I see as the hope for America's future. You know, in your news segment, you said that Occupy Wall Street is spreading around the world. I actually see it as a belated but inevitable entry, you know, by America into a global democracy movement.
Sure.
That's triggered by social media, the demographic and cultural shifts that we're going through, and, of course, the Wall Street banking collapse that plunged us into a global recession. But I think the most important thing that Occupy Wall Street has done, the genius of it, by striking at the root, what they've done is they've changed the questions that we're asking.
Right.
Instead of asking, how do we implement the agenda of the 1%? How do we extract the wealth of this country from our taxpayers to these multinational corporations who really don't have any allegiance here? Instead,
right,
we're asking, why the hell should we consent to that? And how can we refocus our country's attention and our resources to the needs of the 99% to create jobs, to restart our economy, and find some way to have more influence, or at least an equal chance at influencing our elected officials as much as the lobbying money and the campaign donations seem to influence them.
Well, you know, the Wall Street money folks would say, how dare you, Eric Beiler, for saying we have no allegiance to America. Just because our major multi-billion dollar multinational corporations pay no American income tax, how could you say such a thing?
Well, it's in their charter, really, that their purpose is to make money.
Right.
And, you know, they're doing what they're doing what they are paid to do, and they pay themselves.
Yeah, I've never even once considered calling them job creators, because it's not their job to create jobs. They should be called job hoarders, because their job is to pad the bottom line of their company and make money for their investors.
Yeah, yeah. But what I like best about the movement is that it's completely organic,
right,
to the people. You know, it doesn't come from a hired analyst on a corporate political entertainment show. It doesn't come from a hired entertainer,
right,
on a corporate, you know, radio network. It comes from, I mean, this is the digital revolution. These
spontaneous
people, they're talking to each other on live stream, on Facebook and on Twitter. They weren't prompted by something that costs billions of dollars to create and disseminate.
Well, and to show you how to show you just how grassroots it is, there were, you know, reports that the police in Boston were attempting to communicate with the Occupy folks there over Twitter. So that shows you how truly grassroots it is.
Yeah, and it's incredible. There's this thing you should check out called Global Revolution. It's livestream.com/globalrevolution. I've met the guys who are doing this. They are taking donations from just concerned citizens to supply live stream capability to all of the different Occupy, thousands of them around the country. And I've been at the two occupation camps recently in Washington, D.C. And they went in and they trained them. They provided them with a generator so they'd have power. They trained them how to use live stream so that they can make sure that the people's voice are heard through the din of, you know, what John Stewart would call the conflictinator.
Right, because not everybody can get there. I mean, at the end of the day, not everybody can go out and take part in that way. So we've got to give people, people need to have an opportunity to participate in the way that they can, given their circumstance. I think it's important that people are able to engage in that way online and see what's happening for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that that's what Coffee Party is in some ways. We're a hybrid. I'm a hybrid person. Annabelle as well. She's an immigrant from Korea, South Korea. Annabelle Park, the founder of the Coffee Party. And we're sort of in between the ages of this. I mean, I'm very excited to see young people and this really diverse community come out and stand up for their future. But we also need to broaden this coalition and bring in those people who may not be as comfortable risking arrest in order to make their voices heard. And so that's why we have this Citizens Intervention Campaign. It is, we're meeting people where they are. in terms of digital technology. So not everybody really understands Livestream or even Twitter or Facebook. So we have ways that people can just use Google Voice, call our hotline number, and make their voice heard. If you go to coffeepartyusa.com right now, you'll see a montage of their voices that we created. And then the rally that we're having October 29th, for that you should go to citizensintervention.com. We call it an intervention because we don't look at it as necessarily simply the politics of denunciation. I think that's an
right.
important start. But we also have to move toward a solutions-oriented dialogue and a relationship of collaboration with our elected leaders, because they don't want to be part of a corrupt system. They're trapped in a corrupt system where they have to spend 50% or more of their time raising money and so little of their time doing the people's business. And so October 29th, it's the anniversary of the rally to restore sanity, and we're allowing the stage to be populated by the people. People are signing up. We have 400 people already signed up to speak. We're going to be there for a long time. And what we want to do is we want to make this rally the opportunity for the people to intervene and say, I love my country, that's why I'm here, but the dysfunction and the corrupt system in Washington have affected my life in the following ways. And the phone calls that we're getting, the messages that we're getting online, I just think this is going to be a real opportunity to humanize these problems.
So this event that Coffee Party's holding, the Citizens Intervention, citizensintervention.com, people are being invited to go sign up to speak and express their concerns on basically an open mic, directing their attention towards Congress. Are you still taking sign-ups at citizensintervention.com?
Yes, we are, and we're going to accommodate. We're going to stay there until everyone's had a chance to speak. Our permit allows us to go through the night, and we are going to have live streaming there. Hopefully we'll have other media outlets, but we'll have live streaming there the entire time, as long as it takes, so that everyone who wants to speak gets a chance. And you can go to citizensintervention.com and sign up to speak. And like I said, there are many other ways that you can add your voice to this movement, which really this is just the kickoff of what we want the Citizens Intervention to become.
And Eric, when we come back after this break, I want to chat with you about what the ultimate goal is here, because it can't just be we're going to talk, right? I mean, I know that Coffee Party has some objectives in mind, and I know that this is only the beginning of a year-long campaign of change. So when we come back, we'll pick you up there, and we'll talk more about this. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Eric Beiler. He's a co-founder of Coffee Party USA. We're discussing the Occupy Wall Street movement and their efforts to have a citizens' intervention in Washington on October 29th here in Washington, D.C., on the yard, basically the front lawn of the nation's capital. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. We'd love to hear from you and hear what you have to say. How has Congress's inaction affected your life? We'll pick you up on the other side of this.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, more with Eric Beiler from Coffee Party USA and how you can help in the citizens' intervention. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman This is the Tom Hartman Program. Sorry, I've been a little choked up thinking about what the wealthy in this country are doing to us. Filling in for Tom today, I am Carl Frisch. You can find out more about me at carlfrisch.com, where you can find my link for Twitter and Facebook and everything else in the social media. If you're just joining us, we've been talking to Eric Beiler. He's a co-founder of Coffee Party USA, which is preparing an October 29th citizens intervention on the lawn of the U.S. Capitol, where everyday Americans will speak truth to power and explain how government inaction has affected their lives. Eric, thanks for sticking around. Do you mind taking a couple calls?
Sure, I'd love to.
All right. We've got John, who's listening on KPOJ in Hillsboro, Oregon. John, thanks for joining us.
Oh, hello. You know how history repeats itself, no matter how far back you go, Roman Empire, U.S., this and that. Well, here's one that I remember from years ago reading. In the mid-1300s, like 1340 to 1380, England was trying to colonize France. This is where that Joan of Arc stuff, you know, started.
Sure.
Whatever. Okay. Well, the wars were going on. The war was going on and on. That the crown ran out of money, so they were going to the lowest denominator, the poorest people, taking their cows and chickens.
Right. Looks like I think we lost you. We'll pick you up later, I guess. Henry, listening to KTLK in Los Angeles. You're in Pacoima. What do you think? Henry? Henry? All right. I guess we don't have him. Eric, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Can you hear me, Eric Beiler?
I wanted to try to address the question you asked me before the break.
Yes.
I think that the occupiers already recognize the real challenge that we face as a people, that we have to make sure that this awakening is sustained long enough to actually change the policies that have led to this economic crisis. So why, you know, if you think about it visually, right, we've begun at the root of the cycle of...
Are you in a construction zone, Eric?
No, those aren't my noises.
Oh. Interesting. That's much better, Eric. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Do you want me to start over?
No, go ahead.
Okay. But the Wall Street, the reason why it's resonated with so many people is that it begins at the root of our cycle of corruption. But what's the next installment, the next station is K Street. And that's why the occupiers are on K Street at McPherson Square. They recognize that. And they recognize that the next step, and it, actually if you just go a few miles south, to Freedom Plaza, they're within sight. It's a direct sight line of the United States Capitol, and that's where the second occupation camp in Washington, D.C. is set up. And what we're looking to do on October 29th is to march right down Pennsylvania Avenue to the Capitol, the West Front Lawn of the U.S. Capitol, and not only bring the energy and the passion and the dedication of, you know, wanting to make sure that the attention is paid to that the needs of the 99%, but also the passion and the patriotism of a broad spectrum of Americans, and that's what Coffee Party represents. You know, we are nonpartisan. We have many Republicans and conservatives who share those values and share those concerns. They may not share those tactics. And so by opening this up, yes, we will have representatives from the Occupy movements from different cities, but we also are going to have people who are far more conservative, not necessarily just in politics, but more conservative in terms of their tactics. We want to make sure that there are multiple ways for massive numbers of people to infuse our democracy with participation,
right,
because that's the only way we can protect ourselves from the influence of special interests and radical agendas.
So what exactly is the aim here? What would you like to see Congress do as a result of this, and what happens next?
Well, you know, Coffee Party at the very beginning took a poll, and the three issues that we decided to organize on among our membership is Wall Street reform, tax code reform, and campaign finance reform. We see those as the three points in the cycle of corruption by which the wealthiest corporations and the wealthiest people are able to essentially buy policy that further enriches them by changing laws, by creating a lawless regulatory system that has so little oversight, and it shifts so much of the cost to the people and reaps all the benefits for private multinational corporations. All of that money that they reap from the policies that they buy is then invested in more influence through electoral, campaign spending and lobbyist spending. And so it becomes a cycle that's a political crisis. And it's political dysfunction that has led to this mass concentration of wealth in the top 1%. So we've gotten to the point where the rest of us don't have enough money to actually buy the products that fuel our economy.
Right. Well, and so you're going to be speaking directly to Congress October 29th. People can go to citizensintervention.com to sign up and speak. What happens after the speaking stops? What's the next step for Coffee Party USA?
Well, during the rally and all leading up to the rally, we have something called Citizens Lobby. And we really believe in handwritten letters. That's what we're trying right now. We even have special stationery that you can download at citizensintervention.com. And if you send your letters by October 29th, we'll hand deliver them on Halloween. We're going to do trick-or-treating on the halls of Congress. We got all kinds of volunteers. And what we're going to do, Annabelle and I, Annabelle is in Maryland, I live in Virginia, and we have a lot of Coffee Party volunteers in the D.C. metro area. We're going to set up a citizens lobby so that we're present and visible on Capitol Hill every week. As often, you know, maybe twice a week, we'll be visiting on your behalf and be working in concert with local chapters. And, you know, you don't have to be a member of Coffee Party, but other Americans who want to have a voice in Congress. The people deserve a lobby.
Absolutely,
this is
Eric.
A year-long campaign.
I couldn't agree more. If you want more information, if you want to join Eric Beiler and the folks at Coffee Party USA in staging the citizens' intervention on Washington on October 29th, you can sign up to speak at Coffee Party USA, or you can sign up to speak, rather, at citizensintervention.com. Eric Beiler, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Carl.
Absolutely. We want to hear from you. What do you think about Coffee Party USA's plans? What do you think about the Occupy Wall Street movement? Give us a call, 866-987-TOM. 866-987-8466.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom today, I am Carl Frisch. You can find out more about me at carlfrisch.com. Follow me on Twitter. Find me on Facebook. Google me. Look me up on Google Earth. Depends on how deep you really want to go. If you're just joining us, in the first hour of the program today, we talked to Bill Press about the Republican debate last night. I told him, frankly, I was surprised that the Republican audience didn't cheer when they heard the New Hampshire state motto said at the beginning, and it ended in or die. He was not surprised either. We also talked to Eric Beiler. He is the co-founder of Coffee Party USA, and they're getting ready for an October 29th event here in Washington called the Citizens Intervention, which you can find at citizensintervention.com. I wanted to get to some calls as well. We've got a lot of people lined up, and I want to get to as many of them as possible. Paul is listening to us on iHeartRadio in Portland, Oregon. Paul.
Hi. I just, I wanted to put my two cents in on the Occupy movement.
Yes.
I've actually participated in the marches and protests down here in Portland. I want to confirm that, no, it's not a bunch of dirty hippies. It's a bunch of really educated people that know exactly why they are there. I hear a bunch of different messages from all these different people, not specifically the Coffee Party guy, but everyone has this core platform that they're talking about, and all of the platforms can be very simply summed up to one central message. Get the damn money out of Washington.
Absolutely.
If you take care of that, every representative, every senator, every one of them that's there, they may be there for a short period of time. But if the money's not coming in from private citizens that support their reelection, they will not be there again. And if we get the money out, we get the politicians.
You know, Paul, I couldn't agree more, Paul. But until then, we're still going to have people who are being rejected from jobs waiting tables, even when they have a master's degree. Paul, I want to thank you for giving us a call. Joining me now to talk about the Occupy movement. Is Chris Hedges. He is a senior fellow at the Nation Institute. He's the author of numerous books, including his most recent, The World as It Is, Dispatches on the Myth of Human Progress. Chris, thanks for joining me. Chris, are you there?
I am.
Thanks for joining me, Chris.
Sure.
You've got a great piece at truthdig.com explaining really why the powerful, wealthy elites on Wall Street and in Washington and in the power enclaves around the country are in trouble and why they should be worried. Why don't you tell us what you discovered while talking to a woman named Ketchup?
Well, first of all, the system itself and the people who run it know far better than you or I is utterly corrupt,
right,
and rotten and gamed. Against us, the 99%. And what they desperately don't want is a kind of wider consciousness throughout the body politic that understands how we've all been had. As I think the previous caller noted, and this is certainly true in the Wall Street demonstration in New York, these people are really, really sharp. And I think if you look, it's quite a long interview I do with this woman named Ketchup. It's going to be a very hard movement to thwart. The sort of corporate media and the Mandarins and the Democratic Party, along with their pundits, have been carping that these people don't know what they want, that they don't have specific demands, i.e., are they challenging corporate personhood? Are they calling for electoral reform?
Yes.
They know precisely what they want.
Yeah.
And what they want is a reversal of the corporate coup d'etat that has taken place and that has turned the phrase the consent of the governed into sort of a cruel joke.
Right.
What they want is a restoration of the country. And they recognize that unless we dismantle that corporate structure, which writes our legislation, which has turned the judiciary into a wholly owned subsidiary of the corporate state, that has seized control of almost all of our channels of communication. It's why the first thing the protesters did in New York was set up their own form of communication. If you remember when those young women were pepper sprayed, there was no traditional media there.
No.
They had their own media. And by covering it, they began to shame the traditional media into doing their job.
Well, and speaking
of the alternative press and Ramparts did in the 60s with the traditional media.
Speaking of the traditional corporate media, as it were, I want to play this clip of Chris Wallace from Fox News, because if you think about Fox News in terms of the corporate media, this is a news organization that built the Tea Party movement. And it's by no mistake that they did that. That Tea Party movement has been used by Republicans to try and give even more power to that wealthiest 1%, the most powerful in this country. They're simply pawns of that segment of our society. And it's no surprise that it's been Fox News who has been the most vicious and most negative towards this movement. Let's hit clip 7 with Chris Wallace.
Just as you see this demonstration, and it's getting, I have to say, a lot of coverage, maybe more than it deserves from the mainstream media, but it is an interesting development around the country, and I think worth talking about.
Is the movement getting too much coverage, Chris?
It's getting a lot of coverage, but the coverage is very superficial. I think what has disturbed me is the lack of actual reporting.
Right.
In the early coverage of the New York Times, they were writing that they were sort of, misfit, disorganized hippies, equating it to the 60s. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Right.
And I actually ran into the managing editor of the New York Times, who's a good guy, and I know him. And I said to him, look, you have to send a reporter. They're highly organized. You have to send a reporter down there and just report, do basic journalism. Which, to his credit, he did. And I think that we have to stop sort of using cheap cliches to define the movement and begin to explore its structure. The article you mentioned in Truthdig is essentially about that.
Right.
And I think how potent, resilient, and sophisticated it is. And I think that while there's been coverage, I mean, I was down there on Sunday, and Geraldo Rivera had set up a platform, and God knows what he was spewing into the microphone. So there's coverage, but I don't think
he was
going to
open a vault of some kind. We've actually got audio of that. I think the folks in the Occupy movement have gotten wise to the games that Fox News is playing. They all saw that video of Will Jenkins, I think his name is, the Fox News producer who was out there interviewing people, and when he got a cogent, articulate, well-thought-out argument from one of the demonstrators after really pressuring him to talk to Fox News when he didn't want to talk to Fox News because he knows their slant, he knows their bias, and it wasn't aired. Let's hit that clip of clip 8 of Geraldo.
Here in Zuccotti Park. Now I think the same guys who are in Madison, Wisconsin are here. So
he was basically chanted down and ended up leaving
before
he could get a real report out there, Chris. I want to know, will you stick around for one more segment? I'd love to talk to you a little bit more about your piece and where this is going from here. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Chris Hedges. He's got a great piece at truthdig.com. He's a senior fellow at the Nation Institute. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call. We'll take your calls after the break. 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom today, I am Carl Frisch. Again, we're talking to Chris Hedges about the Occupy Wall Street movement, what the powerful are doing to keep the 99% down, and what the next steps are. We'll be back in a minute.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Up next, more with Chris Hedges and the Occupy Wall Street movement and your calls. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. If you're just joining us, I am filling in for Tom today. My name is Carl Frisch. More about me at carlfrisch.com. We're talking to Chris Hedges. He's a senior fellow at the Nation Institute. He's got a great piece at truthdig.com today about just how organized the Occupy Wall Street folks are and how intent on nonviolence and winning this argument, creating real change, they are. Chris, thanks for sticking around for me after that break.
Sure.
I'd like to get a call, if you don't mind. We've got a couple people here that... that have something to say. Let's take Matthew, who's listening, who's watching on Free Speech TV in Estabula, Ohio. Matthew, thanks for joining us.
Hello?
Matthew, yes.
I got a message for the Republican delegation.
All right.
I believe corporations are people when they execute one in Texas.
That's an interesting way to think about it, I think, Matthew. So, Matthew's comment, Chris, really speaks to the outrage of how coddled the corporate class is, don't you think?
Well, the outrage is legitimate.
Yes.
Although I would add I'm fervently against the death penalty. although he raises a point. I mean, if corporations are their people in every sense of the word, except, of course, they can't get arrested.
Right.
They have all of the rights of personhood and none of the responsibilities. I mean, the whole system is absurd. And I think the absurdity of the system is being exposed. And it has up until now not been confronted or exposed by corporate media, which has spent the last few decades paying deference to systems of power that are criminal enterprises, starting with companies like Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, it's a vicious cycle if you think about it. I mean, these corporate media companies investing in the powerful for access, and then it just continues the cycle over and over again.
Well, even at the New York Times, where I worked for 15 years, you know, the unwritten ethic of the newspaper is you do not significantly alienate those on whom we depend for access and money.
Right.
And unfortunately, with the rise of unfettered, unregulated capitalism, and Carl Pogliani writes about this in his 1944 book, The Great Transformation, we have unleashed upon the society both a mafia political system and a mafia economic system. Those are actually Pogliani's words, brilliant economist. And that's what we're facing. And I think when the reality begins to seep down into the body politic, and I think that is the great benefit of these movements, that phrase 99%, the 99%ers, is not a misnomer. We have reconfigured American society into an oligarchy, and you can't sustain a democracy in an oligarchy, as writers such as Thucydides and Plutarch understood. And unless we wrest control back from the corporate state, we are going to be reduced to a world of masters
And that's
and surf.
That's perhaps what's most breathtaking about, you know, the broad-based support or the broad number of people that are being brought out in support of the Occupy movement. They understand that, and that's what they're here to do, in large part, is wrestle that control back so that we can have the democracy that we grew up thinking we would have. You know, one of the things you write in your piece when you're talking to this woman Ketchup about why she's there and, you know, the basic basics about how this was organized, you write, but perhaps the most important rule adopted by the protesters is nonviolence and non-aggression against the police, no matter how brutal the police become. The cops, I think, maced those women in the face and expected the men and women around them to start a riot, Ketchup said. They want a riot. They can deal with a riot. They cannot deal with nonviolent protesters with cameras. That's really what this is about, isn't it? I mean, you keep on hearing about these police that are becoming abusive, and most of it sounds like when they get the opportunity, this is what they're doing, thinking that they're going to be caught, they're going to be able to do it without cameras around.
Yeah, well, the police have clearly backed off in New York because until that incident, which happened on a Saturday afternoon, they were getting, you know, the harassment and the brutality was being ratcheted upwards. So they just got exposed and shamed.
Right.
And now when you've got traditional media, which up until that point had ignored these protests there, their hands are tied. They can't do the kinds of things they were doing before. Including using their squad cars in the middle of the night to circle the park and with their flashing lights and sirens to keep people awake, that kind of stuff. I mean, the big question is where this goes. We don't know. I've covered movements around the world. I covered all of the revolutions in Eastern Europe, the street protests against Milosevic in Belgrade. These movements have a life of their own, and even the organizers can't know what's going to happen. I remember sitting in Leipzig on the afternoon of November 9th, 1989 with the leaders of the East German opposition street protests, and they talked about perhaps within a year there would be free passage back and forth across the Berlin Wall in literally a matter of hours, at least as an obstruction. The Berlin Wall didn't exist in terms of blocking free passage. So even they don't know. The same was true in Czechoslovakia. We would meet every night in the Magic Lantern with Václav Havel, the basement theater there. If we, at the beginning of those protests, anyone had suggested that the Czechoslovakian Communist Party would not exist within a month, they would have been laughed out of the room. We don't know. We know that these systems of power are rotten. They have no legal or moral legitimacy. And because of that, they're fragile.
And Chris, we're going to have to leave it there. You can find more from Chris Hedges, his great, compelling, and insightful work at truthdig.com. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom. I'm Carl Frisch, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Coming up, we're going to be talking about Newt Gingrich's Eyes on the Court with Marge Baker from People for the American Way. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom. I am, as always, Carl Frisch. You can find out more about me at carlfrisch.com. Go ahead and follow me on Twitter and Facebook, too, at Carl Frisch. I want to hit some of your calls. We've got Frank, who's watching us on Free Speech TV in Manhattan, New York. Frank, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you. I've been down to the Ground Zero area and Occupy Wall Street many times, and I find it very intellectually stimulating. There's a major cohesion there where strangers are becoming friends and really talking about the issues.
How can you say there's a major cohesion there when nobody knows what the occupiers want to do? They don't have a coherent list. They haven't even written legislation yet, Frank.
Well, that's the whole point. The idea is there's intellectual conversations going on. We all obviously know, I've talked to many people many times there, and it's not about Republican versus Democrat. It's about the corporate greed. The wolves are guarding the hen house and an out-of-control systemic problem that's growing worldwide in recognition of the problem of just, obviously, out-of-control greed and the corporate
Absolutely, Frank.
Welfare.
Frank, it's corporate greed while the rest of us bleed. Let's hit some more calls. We've got Jim, who's listening on KTLK in Los Angeles, California. Jim.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, hi. I've been listening to this. First of all, let me tell you that politically, I'm a conservative towards the center. I don't believe in these movements. I was telling the screener that the gentleman who spoke from the coffee party.
Yes.
Yeah, they made more sense in their approach, although I disagree with them, but they had some common sense, rational approach. They're going to do letters, get signatures, go talk to Congress. This occupying business is anarchy. And like the other...
No, sir, anarchy...
You don't know where it goes.
Anarchy...
When you have a mass public like this.
I think you're confusing, activism for anarchy. Anarchy would be, operating with no organization, no government, etc. There's plenty of organization going on here. They're trying to make their point, and when you're part of the 99% and you're being held down by the 1% of the most powerful in this country, you've got to do something to get noticed. I'm glad you think that the coffee party folks are on to something with their support for campaign finance reform and reforming the way that business is done on Wall Street and making the tax code more fair. I think it's that kind of multi-partisan approach that's going to get things shooken up, and we'll probably see a lot of people turn out for that citizens' intervention. We'll get one or two more calls before we go back. We've got Ian, who is watching us on Free Speech TV in St. Cloud, Florida. Ian, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Carl. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I could be better.
Yeah.
I was listening to your TV program briefly just now, and I walked in, and New York mentioned they didn't know which way the Occupy Wall Street program was going to go. And I think the next best thing to do, once we get the recognition, and since we are on Wall Street, where the mess has started, we should go ahead and demand investigations concerning all who inhabited Capitol Hill at the time of the Wall Street bailout. And I mean people like Paulson,
mm-hmm.
Bernanke, President Bush. We need to do a high-level investigation as to how this happened, how it was allowed to happen.
Yeah, I don't know how you can possibly, do anything to fix the problem in Washington if we don't know precisely what happened. I think there's been a lot of really good journalism that's gotten to the bottom of a lot of it. But in the end of the day, American people continue to suffer. And those banks that nearly, crippled this country for good, that really hurt this economy, they're doing better than ever. They're bringing in money hand over fist. They've gotten billions of dollars in government money, and they're holding on to it. They're not job creators. They're job hoarders. And hopefully the Occupy Wall Street people, if they can shake the girders of those buildings enough on Wall Street, perhaps we'll see some of those corporate leaders using those golden parachutes to escape so that we can get things going in the right direction. We'll take one more call, and then we'll hit our next guest. We've got Betsy, who's watching on Free Speech TV in Seattle, Washington. Betsy, thanks for joining me.
Hey, Carl.
Hello.
Hello, Carl.
I'm here.
I heard about an application for mobile devices where you could walk through Washington, D.C. and point your mobile device at a building, and it would tell you the occupant's subsidy from the government, how much money that the occupants got from the government.
That sounds like something the Sunlight Foundation might have created.
It might have been. I can't remember who created it. But I think it would be a really appropriate application for occupying. You could point your device at any given building. It would tell you how much the CEO makes.
Well, I do know the Sunlight Foundation has an iPhone app that when you point it at a house or a building or whatever, it tells you how much the occupants donated to the candidate there. Aside from snooping on your neighbors and finding out who they're giving their money to, I think it's important for us to be armed with our facts. And one person who's really good at getting to the core, getting to the facts, as it were, is a really great reporter, Lee Fang, who's with thinkprogress.org. And he's joining me today. We're going to talk about a variety of different issues. Lee, thanks for joining me.
Hey, Carl. How's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, thanks.
So, one of the things... it was only a matter of time, really, before the right-wing crazies decided that they were going to respond with some kind of a spoof on the 99% crowd. And one Eric Erickson, whose parents were so creative, they named him the same thing twice. He's the founder of the We Are the 53% website, and you caught him basically red-handed whining about his new home, his brand-new house, and his well-paid, well-lined pockets from CNN, that job he's got over there.
Yeah, so Eric Erickson, you know, the founder of Red State, he's basically trying to mock the Occupy Wall Street movement in this popular Tumblr that's basically showing, you know, folks who are suffering in this economy. Well, Erickson created his own Tumblr, and he said that, look, I'm suffering too. I can't sell my house. I'm struggling with three jobs, but I'm not like you guys. I'm not complaining. I'm not blaming Wall Street.
And what are Eric Erickson's? And by the way, for the point of disclosure and to hurt Eric Erickson's reputation, there was a spell in 2004 that I worked with Eric Erickson, and our employer was MSNBC. So hopefully that drives his traffic down a little bit. But Eric Erickson complaining about three jobs. What are those three jobs? We know he runs his blog, Red State, right?
Yeah, his blog is owned by Eagle Publishing, a big right-wing
one of the biggest
outfit.
Right.
Yes, it's the biggest, if you don't count News Corp. And he also has a very plush contract job with CNN. You know, a lot of people go on CNN and they speak, and they don't get paid, but he actually has a contract position, so he gets a regular salary, gets travel paid
they
for.
They even kept him on staff after he threatened to, you know, pull a shotgun on census workers.
Sure, and, you know, he has a myriad of conflicts of interest, yet he goes on TV and hawks his different positions without disclosing that different candidates and corporations fund his blog. Furthermore, he has another job, a radio hosting job that, you know, takes a little bit of his time every day,
right?
In the Georgia area. That's another stream of income. And another one that's not even a working job. He has, I think, two books, so he collects royalties.
Well, Lee, I think you're looking at this the wrong way. I've read the Tumblr of the 99 percenters, and, you know, he has the same plight as that person who has two master's degrees and can't get an interview to wait tables. I mean, it's the same thing, isn't it?
Well, you know, he's doing a little clever gimmick, and he's saying he's part of the 53%. You know, the 53% of people who pay taxes rather than those parasites that occupy the rest of the country. But that's so deceptive, I don't know where to start. Everyone pays taxes, whether it's sales taxes, whether it's FICA payroll taxes, whether it's fees, other hidden taxes that are all throughout society. That's the point. And the more.
Well, it's actually worse than that, Lee, if you think about it. Because the super wealthy in this country do not pay their fair share, they don't even pay the rates that they're supposed to be taxed at. Because they don't do that, other taxes go up for other people, whether it's property taxes to make up for lost income from the federal government, whether it's sales tax to compensate for money that they're not getting from their local government because the local government is filling in the holes of the federal government. People, the lower you get on the economic ladder, the more those tax benefits for the super wealthy impact your lives, even if you're not paying an income tax.
Sure, and you could extrapolate this even further. With no regulation in the commodity markets, there's a really hidden secret tax in oil and food prices as speculators drive up the price. So, you know, you could talk about this in any number of ways. But the point being is that you've got professional right-wing victims who have a silver spoon in their mouth but want, you know, sympathy because, you know, they say they're suffering and the poor should basically pay more taxes.
Well, and Lee, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want to shift from silver spoon in the mouth to silver spoon in the nose. And by that I mean Glenn Beck, who we all know bragged about putting $200,000 worth of cocaine up his nose at one time. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Lee Fang from thinkprogress.org. We'd love to hear what you think. Give us a call at 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. This is the Tom Hartman Program, and filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch. We'd love to hear what you have to say. What do you think of Eric Erickson? What do you think of Glenn Beck's attacks on the Occupy Wall Street crowd? These are the issues we're going to dig into. This is the Tom Hartman Program, and we'll be back after this.
listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, more with Lee Fang from ThinkProgress.org and your calls. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom. I'm Carl Frisch. And yes, that is the first time ever a progressive radio show has ever featured the theme music of the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. If you're wondering where Tom is, you can watch him tonight live at the Battle of the Talk Show Hosts at 7 p.m. At www.am760.net. That's out in Denver. He and David Sirota will be facing off against a bunch of right-wing radio hosts. And this Friday, Tom is going to be on Bill Maher's program on HBO. You can find more details at TomHartman.com. And be sure to tune in. It's going to be a great show. If you're just joining us, we are talking to Lee Fang from ThinkProgress.org. We'd love to hear from you. 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. Lee, thanks for sticking around. You still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You know, it's not surprising that the right wing is you know, upset about the Occupy movement. This is the last thing they wanted to do was inspire people to finally stand up. But Glenn Beck has been interesting, to speak. This is not uncommon for him to have conflicts of interest, but you caught him in a pretty deep one when it came to vilifying these Americans, didn't you?
Well, Glenn Beck is, you know, filling the same kind of role that he's played for many years. He's just vilifying anyone on the left, right. Any progressive ideas. But as he's basically shilling for Wall Street, saying that anyone who protests the bankers is a loony, some kind of deviant, as he calls them, he's not really disclosing that he actually has a financial connection to the same banks that are down there on Wall Street. For one thing, he has a regular partnership where he's paid speaking fees, and he's also partnered with them on this show with the largest big bank lobbying association in the country, and that's the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is funded by millions and millions of dues from Goldman Sachs, AIG, JP Morgan, and several hedge funds. And, of course, he never doesn't tell his audience that. And the bigger kind of conflict that's kind of right there in the open, but no one calls him out on it, is his official partnership with FreedomWorks. He actually directs his listenership to join FreedomWorks quasi-Tea Party groups, but he doesn't disclose that the leader of FreedomWorks is Dick Armey, a longtime bank lobbyist who spent years basically tricking grassroots conservatives to support privatization schemes and bank deregulation policies. Go ahead.
Isn't it even a little bit deeper than that? I mean, if you think about it, isn't FreedomWorks trying to get the folks in the Occupy movement to focus all of their attention on the Federal Reserve?
Yeah, and, you know, there are legitimate concerns about
needing
to audit the Federal Reserve at some of these kind of unchecked loans that they've given out to kind of shady banks. But at the same time, they're basically using misdirection. They're telling folks in the Tea Party and some of the libertarian movement that, look, don't protest the big banks, don't protest the big corporations, don't protest the crony capitalists, only focus on the Federal Reserve. And they're using this kind of it has kind of a scent of anti-Semitism, but they talk about this. It's only a Federal Reserve conspiracy, and just don't worry about those big banks, especially the ones that pay Dick Armey's salary.
Yeah, pay no attention to the sweaty bankers behind the curtain.
Right.
It's the Wizard of Oz, and Glenn Beck is the flying monkey, I guess. it's really quite sickening. Do you have a second to take a call with us?
Yeah, sure.
All right, why don't we hit David, who's watching on Free Speech TV in Phoenix, Arizona. Welcome, David.
Hey, Carl. How's it going?
It's going good. What do you have to say?
You know what? The one thing I think the occupiers are not focusing on is how the 1776 revolution went on when the British Empire actually
I dropped Lee on accident.
You know, and of how the same thing is going on now, and how we're actually coming up to this point of a boiling point. I mean, my wife and I you know, have luckily have had jobs through this recession, and she has a master's degree. I have an undergraduate degree, but we're still struggling. I just don't understand why the politicians aren't understanding what's going on in this country.
Well,
right
and
now.
It's not just, and we'll be back with Lee Fang in just a minute, but it's not just sure. that people are unemployed in this country, and I perhaps sure. that's why the anger is so pervasive. There is a serious problem with underemployment in this country. People not being paid well enough for the work they do. People having to get multiple jobs to support a family or even themselves. I mean, this is something, you know, back when my parents were just getting into the workforce, it was a choice if a second parent wanted to go into the workforce. Now it's a necessity for many people, and not just into the workforce, but multiple jobs into the workforce. Lee, I know Lee is back with us, thankfully. Accidentally dropped him. Lee, what do you have to think about that?
I'm sorry, I got cut off.
Sorry about that. Well, you know, the basic question was, isn't this at a boiling point at this point, and how can anybody on the right continue to ignore that this is a problem that is finally being confronted by a large portion of the American people?
Well, you know, I've heard the criticism that the Occupy Wall Street movement is anarchy, that there's, you know, no oversight,
right.
no organization. But the truth be told, the conservative position is that there's anarchy on Wall Street, but it's not going on in Zuccotti Park. It's going on inside the buildings for Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan. There's no law and order. A lot of these firms broke the law, and the law hasn't been enforced, and there's no oversight. I mean, these people are dealing in a multi-trillion dollar derivatives market with no regulation, no cops on the beat, and all a lot of these folks are coming out and asking for is a little bit of law enforcement. Furthermore, you know, I don't think there's anything conservative when you have or traditional about hedge fund managers making $12 million an hour while everyone else is making less and less. I mean, that's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. And, you know, I hear people complain about those folks wearing the bandanas in the Occupy movement. Well, you know, the bankers have been wearing bandanas as they've been robbing us blind, basically, you know, acting like old school Texas robbers for years now. Lee Fang, thinkprogress.org. I want to thank you for joining us today.
Hey, Carl, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch. More about me at carlfrisch.com. We've got more coming up in the next hour, and we'd love for you to stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The rain in Spain is mainly in the rain.
By George, she's got it.
By George, she's got it. The rain in Spain falls mainly because of gays. If you're just joining me, this is Carl Frisch. I'm filling in for Tom Hartman today. I am a syndicated columnist, and that's what my column is about today. You can check it out at carlfrisch.com. But it occurred to me after reading some news out of the UK that it'd be really great if Republicans here in the United States could learn from the Conservative Party in the UK. In My Fair Lady, Eliza Doolittle, a lowly Cockney flower girl, takes lessons, speech lessons, manners, etc., posture, from Professor Henry Higgins, and in the process, she wants to become a proper English lady. And eventually she does, and Higgins helps her. But ultimately we determined that she had it in her all along, and she really was more of an ugly duckling character. And I really wish that we could have our own, you know, sort of modern Professor Henry Higgins here, but he wouldn't be teaching manners and posture and how to dress properly to the Republican Party of today. He'd probably have to teach them, how to be less homophobic and intolerant. Rick Perry was at the Value Voters Summit this past weekend, and the person who introduced him was this right-wing pastor named Robert Jeffress. He is the First Baptist Church of Dallas pastor. And after Perry finished his remarks, Jeffress was out in the hallway talking to reporters, and he said that the reason he was against repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell was because AIDS is a gay disease, and 70% of gay people have AIDS. I know you're probably laughing because it's so ridiculous. And that was enough reason to keep them out of the military. Absolutely ridiculous, but this is a man who was chosen by the Perry folks to introduce him to this audience of so-called values voters. We shouldn't have been surprised by Perry's move. You know, remember that debate between the Republicans, the last Fox News debate, where a gay soldier asked them about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and he was booed by those in the audience. And not a single one of those Republican candidates said anything about it. They didn't say, stop your booing. This is a person who served our country honorably, and he needs and deserves our respect. No, they ignored it. They moved on as if nothing had happened. But the very next day in New Hampshire, State Representative Al Baldessaro was asked about it, and he said, and this is a direct quote. He's, by the way, one of Rick Perry's latest endorsers. He said he was so disgusted over the gay Marine. It was a soldier, not a Marine, in the Army. He was so disgusted by the gay Marine coming out. I thought the audience, when they booed that Marine, I thought it was great. This is the Republican Party that we're dealing with, and this is just on one issue. I mean, we can go down the list, marriage, hate crimes, Don't Ask, Don't Tell. You know, Rick Perry actually wants gay people to go back in the closet. He wants Don't Ask, Don't Tell for all gay people, whether or not they're wearing uniform. Meanwhile, in the United Kingdom, David Cameron announced this week, and we've got the audio if we could hit clip one.
I stood before a Conservative conference once. And I said it shouldn't matter whether commitment was between a man and a woman, or a man and a man, or a woman and a woman. And you applauded me. 5 years on, we are consulting on legalizing gay marriage. And to anyone who has reservations, I say this. Yes, it's about equality, but it's also about something else. Commitment. Conservatives believe in the ties that bind us. That society is stronger when we make vows to each other and we support each other. So I don't support gay marriage in spite of being a conservative. I support gay marriage because I am a conservative.
Ladies and gentlemen, the party of Margaret Thatcher, the conservatives, and they haven't always been hip to the plight of LGBT people, but they've evolved over time. And I know the Republican Party hates to talk about evolution, but this is something that the conservatives, the Tories in England, have done. They've evolved. They've become much more supportive of gay people. And if the prime minister has his way, gay people will have marriage equality in the UK by 2015, which is in his second term. I can only imagine what would happen if the current Republican frontrunner and resident homophobe Mitt Romney were elected president and sworn into office, and within months announced that he would see gay marriage equality become law in this country by the beginning of his second term. One of two things would happen. Either right-wing heads would explode the nation over, or he'd be denied a second term, a second nomination. That's how bad it's gotten. And I, at the end of the day, I don't think we can ever expect the Republican Party to pull off an act of becoming a proper English lady, like Eliza Doolittle does in My Fair Lady. And I don't think we should treat them like one either, because they certainly haven't deserved it. If they're ever going to evolve with the times and become a party that can sustain itself, they're going to have to get with the program and support the simple human dignity and legal equality of all American citizens. Towards that end, the Value Voters Summit, or as I like to call it, a zoo full of crazy people, was this weekend. And one, Adele Stan, was in attendance. I don't know if she was undercover. I certainly would be hesitant to get undercovers with anybody at the Value Voters Summit. You never know what could happen. But we've got her here with us now. She is the Washington Bureau Chief for Alternate.org. Adele, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be here, Carl.
Absolutely. We go way back, but I'm more interested in what happened this weekend.
Well, it was a wild time. And, of course, there was the requisite gay bashing and feminist bashing and liberal loathing that is part of this festival of bigotry.
Isn't it worse than that, though? It's not just gay bashing and feminist bashing or woman bashing. don't they also bash math and science and truth? And I mean, these are the things that they all claim have a liberal bias.
Well,
letters,
yes,
numbers.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, and this time we added to the mix Mormon bashing because the religious right is very
right. Mormons are the cult.
Right. They're the cult. And they really want to knock Romney out. And they did bring the science aspect into it. Brian Fisher, who is known to LGBT folks as someone who has equated us with Nazis and blamed us for the Holocaust.
He's insane, by the way. You know, he's known to school children as the man who said too many Indians were winning spelling bees in America.
Oh, my goodness.
He's crazy.
I missed that one. But he, you know, from the podium, and he was chosen to come right after Mitt Romney on the agenda in a very deliberate act of provocation.
It's like a game of extremist Yahtzee with the speaker lineup.
Well, that's really what it is, you know, and what, so that obligated Romney to, you know, speak to some of the heinous things that Fisher had said, and he did it very obliquely, just saying that, you know, the next speaker was known to say poisonous things. And then Fisher gets up there and says that no president, no person would be, well, he said man would be, and said he was speaking generically here, presuming that,
right,
you know, women are generic men. He said that no man would be qualified for the presidency who believed that human beings evolved from slime. So basically, and of course, Romney has said that he believes that while God was responsible for creation, that evolution was the means by which he created human beings. So,
well, here's the question before we go to the break. I mean, I believe that we've evolved into who we are today, but I also believe that certain people like Brian Fisher are devolving into slime. So I don't know how that fits into his equation or whether or not this disqualifies me for the presidency. But Adele, I'd love for you to stick around so that we can chat a little bit more about this after the break. Do you mind?
I would love to.
Great. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Adele Stan about the so-called Value Voter Summit that took place this weekend with the cavalcade of Republican stars and the right-wing extremist militants that love them. Give us a call, 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466, toll free, and we'll be back after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Up next, we'll talk more about the bigot potpourri at the Values Voter Summit with Adele Stan. Stick around.
Why can't they count our vote? They made voting machines that leave no paper trail.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I am Carl Frisch. You can visit my website at carlfrisch.com or find me on Twitter. I've been asked to spell my name. It's K-A-R-L, F like Frank, R-I, S like Sam, C like Charlie, H like Henry.com. So be sure to check it out and sign up for my email list. If you're just joining us, we are talking to Washington Bureau Chief for Alternate, Adele Stan. Adele, thanks for sticking around with me after the break.
Oh, thanks for inviting me to.
So when we last left off, you were strolling the hallways of a right-wing convention full of bigots and sexists and homophobes. It must have been like Bizarro Dorothy, you know, Wizard of Oz, where you're not looking out for, you know, lions and tigers and bears, but bigots and homophobes and sexists.
Well, what I will say is that, you know, I do this a lot, and it is always sort of like falling down the rabbit hole or, you know, going into an alternative universe.
Stockholm syndrome, perhaps.
Yeah, I guess I've been doing it too long, huh, Carl? But, you know, it was really fascinating, and this whole Mormon kerfuffle, this anti-Mormon kerfuffle that was launched against Romney was really very interesting because it's just the means by which they hope to knock him out. Of course, the real problem is that he endorsed, you know, that he had created a healthcare program that had a mandate.
Right.
And so really, this is all just sort of a show for the evangelical voters to knock Romney out to better implement the economic agenda of, like, the Koch brothers.
Well, it's weird because, you know, the Koch brothers funded organizations like Heritage Foundation, et cetera, they always supported a mandate until a Democrat actually got one into law. the other thing that occurs to me is the guy that Jeffress that that said that you know Mitt Romney's religion was a cult, or
right.
or Brian Fisher, who believes the same thing. These are people sharing a stage with leaders of the ex-gay movement, and they're calling Mormonism a cult?
Well, there you have it. And I don't know if you caught last night. I mean, it's a little bit off topic, but, you know, in the debate last night, Michelle Bachmann, she blew quite a little dog whistle for her evangelical followers when she took a snipe at Herman Cain's.
We don't call him Herman Cain when I'm guest hosting, by the way.
Oh, what do
we call him? We call him Herb Cain because that's more comfortable
that's
for Sarah Palin. Yeah, we call him Herb Cain. You can get your pizza with some herbs on top.
Okay, well, she took a snipe at our buddy Herb for his 999 tax plan, and she said that if you turn it upside down, you'll find the devil in the details.
Yeah, you know what's sad about that? I've been using that joke for about 3 months now, and
too.
To have your joke taken by Michelle Bachmann, the biggest joke on the dais, I mean,
but see, you weren't dog whistling to a whole bunch of, you know, evangelical voters to whom, for whom, 666 is... Not just, you know.
Yeah, if I was in a crowd like that, I'd be using a different type of whistle.
It's the mark of the beast.
Right, 666.
The beast is the Antichrist, and she's calling the only black guy in the race the Antichrist. Where have we heard this before?
Well, it's remarkable to watch Bachmann spiral into nothingness again, from which she came. You know, when she was riding high, it was, Miss Bachmann, let's talk about gay issues. I'm only talking about the issues important,
right.
The economy and jobs. And then at the president's big speech in Washington about jobs in a joint session, you know, somebody's like, Miss Bachmann, can we talk to you about, you know, jobs and the economy? And it's like, oh, she doesn't have time for interviews. I guess they should have asked her a gay question when she was just being a congressperson. But now she's getting right back to where she started off. Going after the hardcore religious base and the anti-gay folks.
Well, that's the only shot she's got, and you know, Perry's sinking in Iowa, so she sees an.
Let me put it as simply as I possibly can. They have a better chance of praying the gay away for their clients at her small business than they do of winning a race for dog catcher in Iowa.
But did you catch Romney's softball question to her when he was allowed to ask her a question? He wants her to stay in. He wants all of these religious right folks to be tearing up their vote, you know, splitting it up between them so he can survive.
He also knows that he can't have a press conference every week where every Republican loser has been gets up and endorses him. I mean, eventually it's going to get a little depressing if, like, up next, Herb Cain and Michelle Bachmann and, you know, Lamar Alexander.
I had not considered that, but, you know, there you have a point.
It's the inevitable, you know, the inevitability factor is what frightens hardcore base Republicans the most. And do you think that people are going to take advantage of that in the general election with him?
Take advantage of...
Do you think that the Republican base is going to be fractured as a result of this discontent?
Well, yes, of course. I think that that's really what is going on here. They are getting all split up. But so in terms of the primaries, Carl, I don't see how it shakes out. I mean, I could see how you could even presumably have three different winners in the first three contests.
Ooh, that'd be fun.
Which,
I'd love to see this go as long as it did in 2008. Let's take some calls, Adele, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Sophia is watching on Free Speech TV in Mayville, Kentucky. Sophia.
Hey, Carl, how are you?
I'm well. How are you? What do you have to say?
You're doing a great job filling in for Tom.
Thank you.
Plan to visit your website from now on. I wanted to thank Adele very much for doing what she did. It must have been agonizing being there.
Sophia, we're going to run out of time if you can get to your question really quick.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to make a comment that I had some experience with that kind of oppressive. I'm a lesbian, and the ancient Hebrews, the reason it's such an abomination is goes way back to Sodom and Gomorrah. It was considered an abomination for a man to lie with another man because the ancient Hebrews used to rape their those they conquered in battle. And it goes back to that, and it's been twisted and used, and now the Republicans are taking religion and dividing us. And all I have to say is the only reason I could see anyone would vote Republican is if they were afraid, greedy, or ignorant.
I couldn't agree more. We're going to have to leave it at that. I want to thank Adele Stan, the bureau chief for alternate.org, for sticking around and talking with us about these and other issues. We'll be back in just a little bit with more of the Tom Hartman program.
listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, we really do have Marge Baker from People for the American Way. We're going to talk about Newt Gingrich's plans for the courts. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I am Carl Frisch. Been here with you all afternoon. Visit my website. Sign up for my emails, carlfrisch.com. That's K-A-R-L-F-R-I-S-C-H.com. You can find me on Facebook and Twitter as well, and YouTube, too. Let's get to your calls. We've got Dave listening on WHMP in Suffield, Connecticut. Dave, what do you have to say?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm sick and tired. Every time the Republicans want to dodge the issue, they break out the gay issue like it's a pool of quicksand that they just push, you know, Democrats into.
It's brightly colored quicksand,
yeah,
I will say.
Right?
But I will say, you know, it's no, not
gay.
It's not unusual for them to
like
try.
That, but
it's not unusual for them to try and do this. I think
it's really sickening.
I think
that
the effect is where.
I think
the effect is wearing off, Dave. And over time, what we've seen is more and more Americans, Democrat and Republican, coming out for gay folks. Marriage equality is now more popular in this country than ever before, with a clear majority supporting complete, you know, legal equality and simple human dignity for same-sex couples when it comes to marriage and other issues. Thanks for your call, Dave. We're going to take another one. Let's hit Larry, who's watching on – no, apologies to Larry. Let's hit David, who's listening on WHMP in Springfield, Massachusetts. David.
Yes, I've heard you discuss religion here within the last half hour.
Yeah.
And I'd like to say that our Constitution was written as a secular constitution.
Right.
On the idea of separation of church and state. And our greatest president, most intelligent president, way out front of anybody else, Thomas Jefferson, did not want to have chaplains serving in the state legislatures or the Congress.
Well, what about Christine O'Donnell? What about Christine O'Donnell out in Delaware who shot at her Democratic opponent, now Senator Chris Coons, and said, oh, yeah, with separation of church and state, where's that in the Constitution?
Well, she doesn't understand the Constitution if she made that remark.
No, and the beautiful thing about our Constitution, our founding charter, is that it not only protects your right to practice your religion, it protects my right not to practice religion and not to have my government telling me what religion to practice.
Well, I'd extend this. Concerning the issue of the chaplains, Jefferson wrote a letter to the Baptists in Connecticut around 1800 or 1804. He said that chaplains should not serve in the Army and Navy. He didn't want chaplains even in the armed forces. And if you look at it, I've checked with Muslim people about this. The Muslim countries don't have chaplains in their armed forces. A person may be a clergyman and serve as an enlisted man or, you know, or an officer like anybody
right.
else. But specifically, they don't have a clergyman serving as an officer called a chaplain that we have in ours.
Well, you want to be very quiet about that information, Dave, because Republicans will attack you saying that history is biased and dates and years are biased, and certainly use the word Muslim in a sentence and you're going to make a right-wing head explode. Speaking of right-wing heads exploding, a few people drive the right-wing crazy, and with good reason, than People for the American Way. They're an extremely important organization. You can find them online at PFAW.org. Joining me now to talk about something that I consider an extremely important issue is Marge Baker. She is the Executive Vice President of People for the American Way. Marge, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. This is a delight to be on.
Absolutely. So Newt Gingrich is grasping at straws for relevancy here. I mean, your organization has taken him, raked him over the coals for something he said about the courts. Why don't you enlighten everybody out there with what Newt Gingrich has his eyes on?
Sure. At this weekend's Values Voters Summit.
So-called Values Voters.
So-called Values Voters Summit, correct. And on CBS's Face the Nation this past Sunday, Gingrich said that as president, he would urge Congress to subpoena federal judges whose decisions he disagreed with and even ignore Supreme Court rulings that he believes are wrong.
Well, I can think of a couple ex-wives that might want to subpoena some of Newt Gingrich's decisions, but this is unheard of.
It's unheard of. It's mind-boggling. It so offends sort of the core constitutional principles that we all totally understand from our third grade civics about the separation of powers and the importance of an independent judiciary. It's mind-boggling.
And what's more, we have rules in place. We have checks and balances on the judiciary to protect us from courts that are, you know, overstepping their bounds or who have become corrupt.
Well, there's obviously an impeachment process for lifetime appointees that have overstepped the bounds and have committed, you know, high crime or misdemeanor. And there's also an amendment process built into the Constitution. So to the extent that elected officials and citizens believe that the court has, you know, misstated it, gotten the Constitution wrong, don't agree with it, you can overturn that ruling through a constitutional amendment process.
Oh, those are sweet, sweet nothings to the ears of conservatives, if you ask me. I mean, we all know that the conservatives that speak so strongly and glowingly about how much they support the Constitution, these so-called, constitutional conservatives, if they had their druthers, they'd be removing, you know, the 14th Amendment, the 16th and 17th Amendment. I mean, I don't know where they'd stop. They don't stand up for the whole Constitution, do they?
They totally don't. And it's absurd to think that they do. But the notion that you know, some darling of the Tea Party, Newt Gingrich, is going to suggest that the way to deal with the Constitution is not even to go through an amendment process, which is constitutionally permissive. It's simply to, you know, subpoena the judges and force them out of office without any kind of process. I mean, it's absurd, and it's totally anathema to the separation of powers that are established in the Constitution. So on the one hand, to say that you have somehow fealty to the Constitution or are going to defend the Constitution by these totally unconstitutional ideas, it is truly mind-boggling, and it's scary, and it's offensive.
One could call it anarchy, which is interesting when you consider the insults they're throwing at the Occupy Wall Street protesters.
Exactly. Absolutely. And, you know, this is symptomatic of a larger problem that we have with the Republican Party's approach to the Constitution and how they want to pack the courts with far-right judges. And, you know, another presidential candidate, you know, Mitt Romney, has decided that the person who's going to pick judges for him were he elected president is Robert Bork. So can imagine what kind of judges and justices you get if they're handpicked by Robert Bork. So, I mean, there is a really a problem within in our view, the Republican Party candidates, you know, view of what the courts should do. And this latest suggestion by Newt Gingrich is just totally out of bounds and off. You know, it really is mind-boggling.
It's out of bounds, but do you think his views are that far off from other constitutional conservatives?
Well, I don't know. It seems to be a win at all costs, no matter what. You know, it's not adhere to process. It's not adhere to the Constitution. It's the rules should be what we say they are, and we should get there any way we can. And it is, as you suggest, it's anarchy.
So Newt Gingrich is here. He's grasping at straws. He's showing his complete lack of relevancy to this field. But, you know, maybe he's going to sell some books, so that's okay, right?
Well, I mean, obviously he's free to say anything he wants, and he will certainly feel free to criticize.
It's in the Constitution, right?
Right, exactly.
Not just his ability to say what he wants, but your ability to respond.
That's exactly right, and we will do that. And we will do that loud and clear.
See, if I was a right wing radio host, I'd be saying that you are trying to step in and take away Newt Gingrich's First Amendment rights to freedom of speech. I'm not sure where that accent came from. I just presume that they all sound like Neil Bortz.
He has full reign to make a fool of himself, and which I think he clearly has done with this statement. But it's also dangerous. You don't want to treat it too lightly. The notion that he's suggesting that somehow, you know, a president could ignore the Constitution, ignore the Supreme Court, it really defies reason.
Well, yeah, you know, you said he has free reign to do that. I think he's perfected it as an art form to make a fool of himself. you know, this is a guy who at one time was thought as, you know, the thought leader of the conservative movement. And, you know, if these are his thoughts, I'm not sure what movement he thinks he's leading, but it certainly isn't a movement that supports the
right.
Constitution. And these people are all running for president, and when they get sworn in, they're going to have to take an oath of office that says they will support and defend the Constitution of the United States, not the parts that they support but the entire Constitution.
That's exactly right. And I think that's what's really important. It's the entire Constitution. And, again, we hear a lot of the Tea Party professing fealty to the Constitution, but it's only to those parts of the Constitution that they agree with. And that's a problem. As progressives, I think our position is and should be that we support the entire Constitution. And, you know, that's who we are. That's what made this country great. Yes, it could be amended if we think it can be improved. And there's a process for doing that.
Absolutely. Let's take a call if we can. We've got Tupac listening to 1480 AM in Phoenix, Arizona. Tupac, are you still alive? Tupac? Oh, Biggie must have gotten him again. Oh, let's try this again. Tupac, are you there?
Yes.
Hello.
Yes, I'm here.
So, what do you have to say about the church and state issue here?
Well, you know, if the experiment in democracy that's known as United States of America has as a principle the separation of church and state, then the Americans got no business celebrating Columbus Day, because that's all based on the doctrine of Christian discovery, which is a tenet of doctrine that comes straight out of the religious principles of Christianity imposing by domain of doctrine over the non-Christian peoples and usurping and taking over territories at the planetary level.
Yeah, I think, you know, when it comes to separation of church and state, and I think I accidentally dropped Marge, but we'll get her back for the next segment if she'll have us. This is the Tom Hartman program. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Closing time. Open all the doors and let you out into the world.
That is Semisonic, one of my favorite bands. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I am Carl Frisch. I want to thank Tom for letting me fill in for him today and all of his great team for making it a relative breeze, I like to think. We are now going to take an update from the Talk Radio News Service. Ellen Ratner, are you there? Let's try it one more time. Ellen Ratner, hello.
I am here.
How are you? What? I've been in Dick Cheney's undisclosed location all afternoon. I'm not sure what's happening in the world. Can you help us out?
Okay. Well, essentially, there have been debates both on the Senate floor and the House floor about these various free trade agreements. Kay Bailey Hutchison basically said that the reason that we should support Panama, in addition to the fact that free trade is good for America, is that this is Colombia. The House is Panama, that they have been very good to us in terms of cleaning up the drug trade, and therefore we should award them this free trade agreement. Then, of course, Panama is being argued on the House side.
Right.
And what's fascinating on that is there have been some Democrats that have really taken aim. In fact, Marcy Kaptur of Ohio took aim saying that this is an example of a place where money is being hidden. It's one of the
right.
most offshore countries, a tax haven, and here we're essentially rewarding them. Bill Pascrell of New Jersey talked about the Trade Council, saying that these trade agreements do not create jobs.
That's a lie, Ellen. They create lots of jobs. They've created over 2 million jobs in other countries over the last 10 years.
Right. and it was interesting. Marcy Kaptur also talked about the fact that she said that 5% of jobs actually were, that only 5% of cars in Korea were foreign cars. And if she said, well, you know, we take something like 750,000 of their cars a year.
Right.
And we're hoping maybe to sell 75,000 to them.
Well, and then this is as our auto industry is just beginning to kick into high gear, and a lot of economists are saying that we may ride the auto industry back to some kind of economic footing.
Right. So that sort of focus also, the White House today talked about how important these trade agreements are. And, of course, the president of South Korea is going to be addressing a joint session of Congress. I actually just saw him get out of his car and into the Blair House at the White House just a few minutes ago.
Is there any word on whether or not Speaker Boehner is going to ask him to delay his remarks to the joint session of Congress until after a football game or the Republican debates?
I don't think so this time around. also, there is now a question. It was interesting. The White House went after the Republicans again, saying that they are now trying to pass legislation to eliminate or restrict air and water quality management. They said these are not job creations. If this gets to the president's desk, he will veto it. The White House also talked a lot about...
If he can see his desk through the pollution.
Right. the White House also talked about the attempted terrorist attack, as they call it, on Adel al-Jubar from Saudi Arabia. They did put out a notice to all the embassies to work with the local governments around Europe and around the world to tell them exactly what had happened. Apparently, the president knew about this in June.
Wow.
And just released this, I guess, more recently when they
Somebody
were able
knows how to, keep a secret. I guess so.
They also said that the closest ally to the Syrian President Assad was Iran, and that Assad was not fit to lead, and the U.S. policy is to get Iranian isolation.
Well, it's Republican, you know, the Republicans are now calling for war, basically, at this point. You've got, it's going to be an interesting thing to figure out here in the coming weeks and months, don't you think?
Very, very interesting. One last thing. Harry Reid said that he is going to try and schedule some component parts of the American Jobs Act. The White House said that, look, these are very important. He said the president will sign into law whatever comes down his desk from that part, but he's also going to ask, where is the rest?
Well, yeah, I mean, when he first announced his plan, he said that he wanted it all. And now you've got, it looks like the Senate might move, but you've still got the Republican-controlled House who has said that they're not even going to talk about it.
Right. So we'll see what happens on that front. Also, the Supreme Court today heard arguments on a case on whether it's unconstitutional to strip search somebody who is arrested without reasonable suspicion in a traffic case. This was a man who had an outstanding warrant. However, he had the paper showing that with him that he had paid the fines. They still put him in jail for six days and strip search him. And the question is whether it is okay to strip search somebody on just essentially a traffic violation.
I don't know what the Supreme Court's going to do, but I can tell you, if this person was a corporation, because we know that corporations are people too, they would totally side with him. So...
some will. Even some that are actually still
certainly five of them would side with him if he was a corporation.
But it was interesting that pretty much everybody seemed to agree, even the other side, that violations such as traffic violations, eating food in Washington subways, makes a lot of constitutional and practical problems.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it.
For that.
Thank you, Ellen Ratner from the Talk Radio News Service, for your updates as always.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I want to thank everybody here at the Tom Hartman Program for being so gracious and allowing me to fill in for Tom. His shoes are not easy to fill. For you out there, you can find more about me and learn when I'm going to be doing things like this at my website, carlfrisch.com. That's carlfrisch.com. Join my email list, follow me on Twitter, and find me on Facebook, and we'll connect out there on the intertubes, the interweb, the internets. This has been Carl Frisch filling in for Tom Hartman. Have a great day.
Been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.